Here now, Kogo's Roger Hetchka.
Welcome back. Thanks so much for being there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, your email, your phone calls to our representatives, to our senators on this border issue. You've been hearing and you will hear much more from folks as to what is going on with our lobbying efforts, the kinds of people we're coming into contact with, who needs to be contacted to let them know that we are watching. Now, let me make a tie-in here. We have talked, I think, generally about the national security issue that arises when you have an open border. It's kind of logically you can understand this. There are some folks with me now who understand it on a far, far deeper level. Peter Gadiel is here with us from the 9/11 Families Organization. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being back on. We have talked many times about this. And again, in your own words, what is the connection between the what we're talking about here, which is the border situation, and the national security issue that you're so familiar with?
Well, the 9/11 Commission stated it very clearly and simply that if terrorists can't get into the country, they can't commit terrorist acts. And that same logic applies to violent criminal aliens who killed Jamil Shah Jr. If they can't get into the country, they can't kill Americans. And what we have is a situation where we've got people like Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, who refuse to have our border laws enforced. And in a very real sense, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi have on their hands the blood of Jamil Shah Jr. because their votes in Congress allowed this sort of person, this monster who killed Jamil Shah, to get into this country. And they are, in a very real sense, guilty of participating in this murder.
And isn't that exactly right? Many times I sense these senators and members of the House are so insulated, taking these votes on some kind of abstract, maybe philosophical or spur of the moment or interest agenda reason, not understanding that real people will have to live with the consequence of their vote.
I think you're being too kind to them. I don't think they're the least bit insulated after doing this now for almost 7 years. They know what's going on, but they don't care. They are more interested in who's going to provide them the cash to get reelected. Dianne Feinstein has sold her soul to people who provide campaign cash. She is not insulated. She knows what is going on. George Bush knows what's going on. John McCain knows what's going on. Barack Obama knows what's going on. They all know what's going on. They are not that isolated. They can't get away with that anymore. This has been going on for too long. Nobody in this country who has any wits about them thinks that George Bush or Barbara Boxer or whatever are that isolated from the headlines that they don't know about Jamil Shah Jr. or the many other people who have been murdered. And they cannot know 7 years after 9/11 that it was our own government's responsibility for giving visas to these killers that allowed 3,000 people to be murdered.
Peter Gadiel, 9/11 Families for a Secure America. And we're also with Ed Kowalski. Ed, and let's get a microphone to you because I don't want to talk to Jamil Shah, who was mentioned in a moment ago, who's come here from L.A. to talk about this issue for us, and we're going to talk about it again.
But
Ed, the 9/11 families, you're also involved here, the survivors, people who were killed in this attack.
That's correct. I joined 9/11 families after Peter Gadiel made contact with me in 2005 when Peter expanded the charter of 9/11 families to include family members who've been impacted by criminal, illegal, alien crime. And my niece in 2005, who was 17 years old, on her way to work on a Sunday morning, stalked, raped, and murdered by someone who was in the country illegally, using an alias, and who had previous misdemeanor and felony convictions. And as I said, Roger, all too often, when I joined 9/11 Families for a Secure America, I joined with the same sense of outrage and the same sense of impotence that Peter expressed more eloquently than I, specifically in regards to politicians. And unfortunately, the list goes on and on and on. The Shaws are the latest example of individuals who have been horrifically impacted and whose lives have forever been changed by the actions of someone who shouldn't have been in this country. We're with
So in effect, you're saying that of the 3,000 who were dramatically killed in 9/11 in the attack on this country, But every day, and in little increments, one by one by one, it's the same attack.
Over and over and over again. Roger, we can go down lists of names of people who've been impacted. The stories are all the same. The names just change. And just when I think I've heard the most horrific instance, another incident comes up. Most recently in San Francisco, the Bologna family was forever impacted by the. Their family was destroyed by the activities of someone who was a criminal, illegal alien gangbanger who didn't like the way Mr. Bologna was operating his vehicle with two sons in the car, and he took out an AK-47 and blew that family away. The sanctuary city policies of San Francisco are directly attributable to that murder.
Ed Kowalski. And Jamil Shaw, thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Let's get a microphone on you. And I'll tell you, Jamil Shaw was at this press conference today in which a number of us spoke about this. And none of us spoke from the personal agony and sorrow of this father who lost his son and the description of his son, a wonderful son. There wasn't a dry eye in the place, Jimmy, including you, my friend.
Yes.
You were struggling, and I appreciated the struggle to try to communicate to us what was, what was uncommunicable, in a way.
Yeah.
So, just for the facts, for those people listening, going, "What are we talking about?" What are the facts of this?
3 o'clock this Sunday, March the 2nd. My son, he asked me to go to the mall. Of course, he went on the way home. I called him to see where he was at. He said he was right around the corner. So, of course, we felt good about that. He's made it home again. It's sad, but that's just how it is living in L.A. And 2 minutes later from when I talked to him, I heard the gunshots, and it was so loud and so crisp, I knew it was nearby. And the sound, where it came from, I knew my son was in that spot. I called him on the phone to tell him, "Look out, man, someone's shooting outside." Didn't answer the phone, and it's very rare he won't answer the phone for me because he knows what's going to happen. Went outside, and there he was, laying there already dead. He was gone, and his, he was turned in his face. He was just laying there like he was asleep. Be truthful, he looked like he was asleep, and that's what really freaked me out because I know he wouldn't lay down in the middle of the street and go to bed,
No.
So I went running down there, but I already saw that he was dead, because that sound, when I heard. When I looked and saw him laying in the street, he just, and that sound just came right to my eyes to where I had to back up. I was so close. I'm like, wow, he looks dead. And went running down there and to see a big hole in his forehead, and all the blood, it was, And I think, the worst part, even though his face looked so peaceful, the way his body, I never seen that limpness, in his body. And it just... It just tore me up ever since. We can't go outside. Every time I water the grass, go to work, anything we do, we have to pass that spot. We have to see it. Whenever I come outside, I see him laying there, and I hear the gunshots, over and over every day. It's just like, just like torture,
Yeah.
It just makes you so mad, and you hear about all these stories about these people that have been killed by illegal aliens and all the people that are protecting them. It just makes you... matter. After a while, you don't even care. At first, you were sort of sympathetic for the plight of illegal aliens sometimes. You hear about the good ones, and then after you see how they're treating us, after my son was murdered and he wasn't doing nothing, never been arrested, never been suspended from school, MVP 3 years in a row, player of the year 3 years in a row, all city, all league. It was just everything was happening to the point where it was scary. I mean, once I said, man, this is too good to be true, and it was really scary, to see, how in the world is, how are we going to, make this work? And we thought we made it. And
he was getting those offers from colleges. You were describing all this today.
Yeah.
But the killer, this is what really got me. Not only an illegal alien. I mean, this is somebody with a very specific mission in life, with a tattoo. Talk about this.
Yeah, he had a tattoo on his neck. BK, and we all know in L.A. that means black killer, especially on a Latino 18th Street gang member, So we knew that they knew he was bad news. He had that tattoo from what I heard since he was 14. He's been putting in work like that. He's been killing. The way he killed my son was so horrific that even a district attorney are looking into the cold cases, trying to find out which one of those guys that he killed. Because the way he did it, the callous nature, you know, he just ran up on him. Just for no reason. He wasn't mad at him, didn't know him. He was just coming home from the mall. You know, he enjoyed coming home. He liked coming home. It wasn't like, oh, let me go to this crazy old man. You know, he liked it because he felt the love, and he knew that we loved him, and we were pushing for him to make it. He was going to sort of like liberate the family, not just financially, because we knew. He used to always say he wanted to get a job. I said, oh, don't worry about money. I'll take care of the money. Just get the education. Stick to what you're doing. I'll take care of the money. The money's going to come later. You'll be able to enjoy it. Have a good life. You know, you have a college degree.
Yeah.
You can get into the NFL. We knew he was going to get a shot at it. How good he
was. He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was. I always say, man, you're like the total package, but I didn't want to get him big-headed. I always say, don't be surprised, because he was like, wow. I said, don't be surprised. We worked for this. This is 17 years of hard work, and it's paying off, you know. And to see it go down, like you say, it's bad enough that he was murdered, you know. I mean, that was the ultimate.
Yeah.
But then to add illegal alien gangbanger that was in the system that's been in jail since he was 10 years old that they knew about that.
How many times was he deported? Didn't they try to get rid of him?
No, he'd never been deported.
Never been deported.
They never checked, even though even his own mother said he was raised in juvenile hall. You know, they just festered him. They knew he was illegal. All these tattoos, BK on his neck, 18th Street on his eyes, his arms, his back. He was just, even had the three sixes, the sign of the devil on his finger, 666. That's the name of 18th Street. They identify with the Satan, you know, the brutality, you know. And he was one of those guys that was known, that was his trademark, to go into a neighborhood that he shouldn't be in and kill somebody. That's just what we heard, you know.
Jamil Shaw with us. Now, what's happened to this killer since then?
He's in jail on no bail, still waiting for arraignment. Just today he was going to have another arraignment, but we came here instead. I wasn't going to, you know, waste my time with him today. You know, I had some better things to do. Even though we knew it was serious, but we found out there was continuance, as usual. They're going to continue until November the 19th. You know, they're trying to, they want the witnesses to fade away, you know.
Sure.
Because the girl that was driving the car is testifying against him, you know. They had an 18th Street gangbanger in the back seat that they won't even charge with. You know, he was there. I said, why? In L.A., anybody in the car in a murder goes to jail. But for some reason, the girl never got charged, never even got arrested. The guy in the back seat, the DA gave him a DA reject because they have a loophole now in L.A. that when there's a car full of people, all you have to say is that, oh, I didn't know what he's going to do. And it's working because I followed like 15 cases when there was somebody in the car where somebody got murdered. Nobody has been prosecuted for that. Just the shooter, even though there's people in the car involved. You know, even the gun.
Same
we don't know where the gun
members.
Is.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was in the back seat. Half an hour after he killed my son, the police department found him in a park with his shirt off, making out with the same girl who said she was so terrified of what was going on. They're in the car making out. My son's still laying in the street. You know, he hasn't even been picked up yet. They're in Culver City in the park. The police come into the park, get everybody out the car, go after her. Her driver's license comes back clean. That's why they do that. She had a clean driver's license. The car was clean. The other guy that killed my son, half an hour, they didn't do nothing. They asked him, where's your driver's license? Oh, I don't have one. He's a legal alien. But just got out of jail within 24 hours. Just came from the murder. Nobody searched that car. Can't find the gun. So that gun is out there somewhere waiting for someone else to kill.
Killing somebody else.
Killing somebody else. Big 45. Can you imagine a 45?
Mm-mm. Jamil Shaw. I got to take a break. I'm Roger Hitchcock, 1-800-600-KOGO, 569-TALK, 569-8255. Cal Walker with traffic, brought to you by Sleep Train Mattress Center.
Well, we don't have 52 open yet. Westbound's been shut down since 12:30 this afternoon after some fires broke out alongside the highway there in Santee. West 52, North 125 also closed at the 52, and that Mission Gorge Road has taken the heat here. So is the eastbound side of 52. Although it's open, it's very...
Fire 14 continues live from Washington, D.C. It's the Roger Hedgecock Show on AM 600 Coco.
Welcome back. Glad you're there. 569-TALK, 569-8255, 1-800-600-KOGO. And we will get to more reports. I hope people are standing by, Coach Snyder, for reports from our lobbying teams. But why we're lobbying and why we're trying to make an impact, I think these stories say more than I could say if I was sitting here for the next 25 years talking about this subject. And I think we talked about this in Iowa, but I want to bring this story back to refresh your memory. Mona Kilborn with us. Mona, welcome.
Thank you.
We talked, did we not, in Iowa?
In December, yeah, soon after my mother was killed by an illegal alien.
Tell me the story.
We had been on a family outing. Mom and Dad were with my
husband.
This
is in Iowa now.
Right.
Iowa.
Heartland of the U.S.
Okay.
People have called me and said, what are you doing with the illegal aliens there? Meat packing plants.
Yeah.
Dozens of them that bring thousands of illegals. The woman who killed my mom and broke my husband's back was already a convicted felon for methamphetamine, served 0 days in jail, paid zero towards her fine, had been picked up for driving without a license, obtained a fraudulent driver's license, blew through a stop sign at a high rate of speed, rolled us over, killed my mother instantly. Mom is gone forever. Our family history will never be the same. And today I told my senator when I visited him, isn't it a shame that I have to come halfway across the country to beg to have the laws of the United States followed? I can't believe that I could even have to make a trip like that. To me, that's a no-brainer. A republic should have its laws followed, and why are we? We're all here for the same reason, because no one's enforcing our laws.
What's happened to the woman who killed your mother?
Again, as a victim, I had to make tons of phone calls and track it down. She was finally deported to Mexico. Whether she's back with new fraudulent documents, I don't know. I talked to ICE, and they said they escort her across the border. And I said, what stops her from coming back tomorrow?
Nothing.
Oh, they said that's the border guard's issue. That's not our problem. So we don't know. We have no closure. We never got to face her across the courtroom.
Mona, we had a famous raid in Iowa. Was it Pottsville?
Postville.
Postville. That's
yes.
Right. Postville.
Northeast Iowa.
Hundreds, as you were pointing out.
At that time, it was the largest ICE raid in U.S. history.
One of these meatpacking plants.
Correct.
But there are dozens of those plants in Iowa, and you're saying they're all the same.
Absolutely. In fact, my husband and I did attend a rally that was held in favor of all the illegal aliens, so a group of us went and did a counter-protest, and I was horrified. The priest there that was heading up the huge amount of illegals that were bussed in from out of state to protest said, up against our small group counter-protesting, they must not have much to do. Well, I'd have liked to have been on a picnic with my mother that day. Thank you very much. I will never get to do that again.
Mona, thanks for telling your story. We're going to take a short break, and there are more of these. Now, look, ladies and gentlemen, my net, after I listen to Jamil, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've talked about this for almost 20 years, trying to get a solution, and I feel like I've let people down. I feel like we have not made a solution. I feel like we have not done what we could have done to stop all this from happening somehow. So it gets me redoubling my efforts. It gets me thinking, what more can we do? Because we got to do more. We got to do a lot more after this.
To the Fire 14 continues live from Washington, D.C. It's the Roger Hedgecock Show on AM 600 KOGO.
Welcome back. Glad you're there. We're going to have another day tomorrow of lobbying and reports from our teams, and we'll get to some of those reports in a moment. But again, why we're lobbying, why we're here, why we're doing this, we haven't done enough. We haven't scratched the surface. As long as one American family is disrupted by the crimes committed by those who should not be here in the first place, we have not done enough. So it's with that spirit. And again, this is a tough thing to listen to, and I appreciate this fact, but you need to know what people are going through. You need to hear the impact, the real impact of illegal immigration. Jocelyn Johnson is a policewoman in Houston, right?
Yes, sir.
What's your rank?
Sergeant.
You're a sergeant in the Houston Police Department.
Yes.
What kind of things do you do as a sergeant? I mean, what does that mean? You're a patrol officer? You're a detective?
No, I supervise a group of people in the burglary and theft division.
You know, you crack the whip on these officers, right?
Yes.
Keep them going out there. Keep them apprehending the bad guys and stuff.
That's what I try to do.
But tragedy hit your family. What happened?
Yes, sir. My husband was killed by an illegal alien who had been deported prior for molesting a 12-year-old child in 1999.
How did that happen? the killing of your husband?
Yes, my husband stopped him on traffic.
So he's a police officer, too?
Yes, he was a police officer also.
I got it. Was he one of those patrolmen you were bossing around? Or?
Yes. I wasn't bossing him around at that time, though.
Okay, so he's out there.
Yes, he's out there.
On traffic.
Running the radar, and he stops him for speeding. He's driving a company truck with no driver's license. He's here illegally. Brought back to the country by his employer, who's provided him with a company vehicle with the knowledge that he's illegal and has no driver's license, and that he's drinking while he's driving, transporting his two daughters and his coworker. And my husband's by himself, needless to say, with four people in the car. He had a lot going on, and unfortunately he searched him, put him in the back seat of the car, unbeknownst to him. He still had a gun hidden in his waistband and in many layers of clothing. And while my husband was searching the vehicle, he got the gun ready and was waiting for my husband to get back in the car. And when my husband sat down in the car, he shot him 5 times in the back of the head and 2 times in the back. Mm. And my husband managed to push the emergency button for help, but it was too late.
The guy was apprehended?
Yes, he was still there in the back seat of the car. Seconds after he shot my husband, the wrecker drivers arrived, and he shot twice at them as well. The first officer on the scene, you know, they took him in custody, and he had no more bullets, so he couldn't get out of the car. It was really malicious and senseless and violent. He had no reason to kill my husband because he couldn't get out, couldn't go anywhere. And, you know, it's just very senseless, and he should not have been here. My husband should be alive today.
What happened to him? After he was arrested?
He was arrested and convicted of capital murder, life without parole. We, the state sought the death penalty. The Mexican consulate paid for his defense. They wanted anti-death penalty attorneys working for him. And they did their job because he got life without parole, not the death penalty. The community, Houston community, was outraged, as well as police community. We thought if anyone should receive the death penalty, he should have received a death penalty. There's nothing like what he did. That whole city shut down the day that my husband got killed and the day of his funeral. My husband was an amazing man, and it showed, and I was very proud that day.
Jocelyn Johnson. Jocelyn, where was this guy from?
He was from Mexico, a Mexican citizen.
Been deported?
Had been deported. Had been arrested for DWI. After he had, I believe, came back in the country, I believe he got arrested for DWI. He got arrested 2 other times for open container and some other minor infraction.
Now, in some cities, if you get arrested like that and you're illegally in the country, they turn you over to ICE and you're deported a couple times. I mean, they don't just leave you to go after criminal offenses like that. Is Houston a sanctuary city? Because the opposite side of it is, they protect these guys. They don't deport them. They don't turn them over to the Fed.
Right. Well, our policy is we don't check their status unless there's some kind of detainer on them from ICE or whatever. We don't really know if they're legal. But we're trying to change that fact. And, you know, we really are understaffed, and we don't have the manpower to take all these illegals in that we know to be illegal. It's just impossible unless we have support from federal government. But right now, we don't do it anyway.
There's a program the feds have, 287G, which is a program for money for training for police to work with ICE.
Right.
Your police chief has said he doesn't want it. He says, as a number of other police chiefs do, including the one in my town, he's afraid the police will lose the trust of the immigrant community and working law enforcement issues in that community if it's known that the police are going to be involved in deporting people involved in crime. Right. Doesn't that just leave a lot of people out on the street, like this guy who killed your husband?
Yes. Local. I mean, it begins at the local level. I mean, we're the ones that come in contact with these people on a daily basis. We know who they are. We know where to get them. We know how to put them away. And it's just ridiculous that we can't enforce this law. It's ridiculous that, you know, we need to start. And
yeah.
The federal government needs to support us by providing more ICE employees for us to transport these people to and to process these people through and get them out of this country. They don't need to be here.
Jocelyn, thanks.
Thank you.
We also have with us, and I'm glad he's here, Daryl Metcalf, who's a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives. He's a 12th District Representative. rather impressive seal on his card here. Is this real gold, Daryl? Taxpayers paying for this?
I don't think you should try and melt that down.
I think that's kind of a phony gold. All right. No, I have that, Jimmy. This is, and you had a folder out, Invasion PA. Pennsylvania. Now, we talked to, of course, to the mayor of Hazleton, Lou Barletta, a moment ago.
Right.
A small town in the middle of, kind of rural Pennsylvania, where he's taken the bull by the horns. He's really after this thing and done a good job. At the state level, is it that much of a problem, what we've been discussing here in terms of the impacts of illegal immigration?
Well, when you hear stories like you've been hearing here with the loss of life, the tragic situations that each of these families have been involved in, there's those same stories in Pennsylvania, triple homicide in Altoona, Pennsylvania, young lady stabbed to death in Pennsylvania, just across the state. Stories of crimes that are being committed against Pennsylvania citizens by those who shouldn't be on our soil in the first place. Federal government's been AWOL for decades on providing a solution to this problem, and I think the majority of Americans look on in Washington and have no hope for Washington fixing this because they haven't, and they've proven they're paralyzed by this issue. I think it's time for, like you had said earlier, we have to do something. When you hear these types of stories, the heart-wrenching story earlier today, Jocelyn's heart-wrenching story, and the many others of the victims, the family members of victims that are sitting here, we have to do something. So last year we announced the formation of StateLegislatorsForLegalImmigration.com, StateLegislatorsForLegalImmigration.com. We have members of 35 states' legislatures involved in this. We have been working to identify leaders in each of the states that are serving in state general assemblies, state houses, state senates to join together to start the network across the country. We've joined together with early to put together a model package of legislation that that we've linked to off of our site to try and provide guidance for state legislators in states that are part-time and the legislators need help and guidance and some direction and that they're not getting because they're not full-time legislators as some of us are in other states.
Are you building on, for instance, I guess, Oklahoma and Arizona? They've passed a number of these laws.
Definitely. Representative Terrell and Representative Pierce from Arizona also and others were involved in formulating, working with early to come up with this model package of legislation. Each of us have introduced legislation. All 50 states have had legislation introduced at the state level, which shows the recognition of the AWOL nature of our Congress and doing their duty. I think it was a great point that was made earlier. It's not just the presidential election that's going to have an impact on this issue. It's Congress. You have all 435 members of the House that are up, and they need to be held accountable, and people should be going after them. And like was talked about here, the problem is that enough citizens aren't voicing their concern, aren't stepping forward. We need more citizens to be outraged. I mean, if anyone listens to one of these stories, I'm sure it's jerking
that's one
at
too
their
many.
Heart.
It no, is. One too many.
We need to step forward. We need to do more, like you said, Roger.
Yep. Daryl Metcalf, Republican from Butler County, Pennsylvania. How big an issue is this in Pennsylvania?
It's an issue that if you look beyond the tragic situations that are occurring, hundreds of millions of dollars are being paid for by Pennsylvania taxpayers. When you look at the federal tax dollars we're paying to incarcerate illegal aliens in our federal prison system of a 25% to 30% number of illegal aliens in our federal prison system. I mean, if this isn't hitting you in your backyard because of touching you personally, then it's hitting you in your back pocket, whether you realize it or not, and taking money from you as an American citizen that's being used to provide benefits, education, and services to people who should not have crossed that border in the first place.
Daryl Metcalf, what's the website again?
StateLegislatorsForLegalImmigration.
Legal, not illegal, but legal.
Yes, sir. StateLegislatorsForLegalImmigration.com. If your listeners listen in and their states aren't represented, go to that website. There's information there. We have audio clips, video clips they can forward to their state legislators. Encourage them to become part of the solution and not be part of the problem by sitting idly by and letting somebody else step forward.
Absolutely. Daryl, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, sir.
I'll pass another website along to the listening audience. We were talking earlier to the 9/11 Families for a Secure America. They are at 9/11FSA, Families for a Secure America, 9/11FSA.org. I'm Roger Hedgecock. Let's take a break and check our traffic at 549 California.
In D.C. on AM 600 KOGO.
Welcome back. Glad you're there. 569-TALK, 569-8255. Now, part of the show that, frankly, has been terrible to hear, but I think necessary to hear, and that is the real impact of a lack of action on illegal immigration, the real impact on people and families, because we have allowed, we, the people, have allowed this to go on. Can't blame the politicians. They work for us. We, the people, have allowed this to go on. So while we may be happy about the fact that last year we turned down the McCain-Kennedy bill when all the politicians predicted it would pass, that's one thing, and that's but it's a negative thing. We stopped something worse from happening than is already happening. We haven't made better what is already happening, which is the invasion of our country and some 20-some million, perhaps 25, perhaps 30 million people illegally in this country from, what, 173 countries around the world of every race, creed, or color. What's your name, sir?
Joe Pylon. Freddie Joe is the nickname.
Freddie Joe.
Yes, sir.
You're a cop.
Yes, sir. 28 years.
28 years, Houston.
Yes, sir.
It's another Houston story.
Yes, sir.
What happened to you? You're here on crutches.
Well, on June the 29th, an illegal from Cambodia.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to get my arms around this one. An illegal from where?
From Cambodia.
The hell did they? How'd they get to Houston?
Yeah, they came through Vietnam on some type of political asylum and basically outstayed their papers. And June the 29th, my partner, Officer Gary Grider, and I were working a traffic assignment in a contained area, contained by barricades. Out of nowhere, approximately 60 to 70 miles an hour, this vehicle came through the barricade, struck my partner head-on, killed him instantly.
How fast was he going?
Well, there were no skid marks.
Just going?
Just going.
And drunk, or?
I don't know. There's been a ton of toxicology tests, so I don't know what the determination with that. It was on June the 29th.
So this is still under investigation?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And the car struck myself, pinned myself against my patrol vehicle, snapped my leg, broken in several places, had some shoulder injuries. The car continued on but was ran into more barricades and a retaining wall. There was a third officer on the scene that was able to make the arrest. The city of Houston was horrified because there was film of the arrest where the Cambodian national got out and was laughing about the entire event. I saw that on the news two days later.
I come from California. They didn't shoot him?
No.
Because in California, I mean, I'm sorry.
No, sir, this was a major freeway. I mean, there was a lot of support out there, citizens, you know, coming to our aid out of their cars.
Really?
A lot of
citizens got involved?
Yes, sir.
Wow. And you had what broken, and you're here today on crutches?
Well, my leg was snapped in several places, and wow. I have some shoulder problems. But Officer Grider was killed instantly on the spot, and I have survived my wounds. I'm healing fine. A lot of support from our department, our city, and it's a slow process, but I know I'll be back out there.
Yeah, God bless. Sir, what's your name?
Gary Blankenship.
Turn right into this microphone.
Gary Blankenship.
Gary, aren't you the head of the Union of Police Officers?
That's correct. I'm the president of the Houston Police Officers Union.
So what is the union doing about the toll here that's been taken by illegal aliens on your membership?
Well, we've teamed up with 9/11 Families for a Secure America. We're here in Washington trying to get attention from our legislators to fund federal overtime programs, to fund. Right now, the borders are not secure, and it's a lesson in futility to try to deport these people when they're back in the country within two or three weeks.
Of course.
So we want federal funding for overtime programs. We want the ICE to be brought up to staffing levels where they can handle these kind of influxes, as they were talking about, 500,000 illegal aliens in Houston. I think if we turned Houston police officers loose for 8 hours arresting illegal aliens, I think we would shut ICE down in that area. They don't have the facilities, the resources.
Maybe that's what you ought to do.
Well,
you know, because you start with the guys, obviously, who have a record, who are still in this country, should have been deported a long time ago. You start with the real people who are a threat to the officers, to the community, to everybody.
Sure.
There's got to be hundreds of those people.
Correct, but we're 1,500 police officers short in Houston, Texas. We have 5,000 police officers. We need about 6,500.
How many people in your city?
Well, up to 4 million people in the greater Houston area.
Okay, so, 4 million. Okay, so we have about a million, what in San Diego, 1.3 million or 5 or whatever it is. But we only have like 1,800 police officers.
I don't know the square miles of San Diego.
It's one of the biggest geographically.
We're about almost 800 square miles.
Yeah, we got something like that,
right.
800 or 900. So I hear the reasons why nothing can be done, but what are you doing?
Well, we're here. We're testifying tomorrow before the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Immigration and asking our legislators to pursue staffing ICE where they can handle this, create federal grant programs for overtime programs for the local law enforcement agencies to get out here and enforce this thing so we can stop some of these tragedies. You know, I've got two Houston police officers. The last two Houston police officers killed in line of duty were both killed by people illegally in this country. It's an issue with us.
But you're not going to do anything until you get overtime money. I don't mean to be harsh on you, but I mean, seriously, if I was a politician in your area, I'd be saying, hey, stop waiting for overtime money. Get out there and do something.
I'm not a politician, and it's not my call.
You're the union guy.
Right.
And I understand.
It's certainly our desire that we move forward on this.
Right. What's your mayor doing?
Our mayor is wanting the federal government to step up to the plate, too.
But not willing to do anything locally.
No. Well, they have made a few steps forward. They've started checking every person booked into the jail. They AFIS'd about 77,000 people.
What's AFIS?
The fingerprint.
Sounds like a book.
A fingerprint database check. Turned over in 2007, they AFIS'd 77,000, turned over 111 to ICE. They've turned over 122. That's not really scratching the surface when you figure
you got more new illegal gangbangers every year than
that. Sure. In 2007, we issued 1.2 million municipal citations, 29,064 felony arrests, and 86,693 misdemeanor arrests. I think many more illegal people were probably involved in those crimes than were detected and deported.
And many of them probably have orders they're ignoring and their unserved warrants.
Sure.
Every city probably has the same problem. I appreciate you coming by.
Sure.
God bless.
Thank you,
sir.
I'm Roger Hedgecock. We'll be back after this.